Hey guys, thanks for joining me for this 72nd episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include Jake Brennan. He's the host of the rock icon podcast, 27 Club. We've also going to be visiting with Caleb Garrett. New single, 2021 Outlook, and upcoming dates we'll talk about. We'll also visit with country legend Ronnie McDowell, talk about the 40th anniversary of his single, Older Women. And we'll also visit with cake man extraordinaire, Duff Goldman. Got a new series, Duff's Happy Fun Bake Time, streaming now on Discovery Plus. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, drop a like, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and share with your friends. Now, this is definitely one way to let your neighbors know how you feel about them. A farmer in Lottie Township, Michigan, has been in a fight with his neighbor named Wayne Lambarth for the past year over where the property line is. So the farmer just decided to make it clear where he thinks the line is by building a 250-foot-long wall between the two yards. Oh yeah, I guess we should mention that wall made out of feces. Now the farmer took all the manure from his farm and stacked it into a wall on the property line. And when Wayne complained, the guy said, quote, "It's not a poop wall, it's a compost fence." And the city says there's nothing they can do about it because the poop wall is technically on the farmer's property. So next time you have a disagreement with your neighbor, hey, it's not a poop wall, it's a compost fence. Remember that. Got a podcast to talk about. Season 3 is up now of 27 Club, and we've got host and author, many other things to talk about as well, Jake Brennan with us. And first off, Jake, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. I'm psyched to be here talking to you.
Now tell us, where did 27 Club originate for you? When did the idea first come up? Obviously, Season 3 out now. How long before Season 1 was it in your heart, if you will?
Well, I have this other show called Disgraceland, and we deal with rock stars and the true crimes that they've either committed or have happened to them. And you know, that series is set up in a way, it's an anthology series where we deal with one artist per 30-minute episode. And as I got into the creation of that show and it sort of took off, I started to think about ways that I could do more long-form storytelling about musicians. And I was looking for a hook and looking for a way in that wasn't just like, okay, I'm going to tell the story of this artist. And I was talking to a friend and we started talking about the 27 Club, and it just became very obvious to me that was the way in. That was my hook. That was how I was going to get into this new long form storytelling.
Now, what has been the biggest challenge or the biggest learning experience for you in the world of podcasting over the last year?
The biggest challenge, I think, was how to continue to sort of stay relevant and provide value to my listeners in a very tumultuous year where something like podcasting seemed, pretty inconsequential comparatively mm-hmm. to, you know, what was going on with a global pandemic. What I try to do is just, you know, continue to do what I do, make great content, maybe make a little bit more of it and continue to pump it out and hopefully provide entertainment and, you know, something of value to the listeners.
Now, Jake, a lover of music and a lover of history, and do those kind of drive you mad fighting against each other from time to time?
No, I think it's I've always been interested in the dark side of history, particularly music history. It's the real life stories to me are often more interesting than the fictionalized stories. So this is right in my wheelhouse. And, I'm very grateful to have been able to develop an audience with my shows. And, it feels very authentic and natural.
Now, Season 3, you're focusing in on Janis Joplin, and Episode 3 actually dropped yesterday. What can folks look forward to in the coming episodes to finish out the season?
Well, there's a lot with Janis that we get into, and we take a very deep dive. I hope, as I do with all the storytelling that I create, is to find ways to tell these stories to bring anecdotes to light that aren't necessarily part of the sort of what I call the made for TV narrative. You know, someone like Janis Joplin, her story has been told a gazillion times. And, you know, even in this medium, and I'm trying to do it in a different way and trying to get to the nitty gritty of what drove her, in her career and ultimately what drove her demise. And that's everything from, you know, her being bullied as a child, to her breaking through in San Francisco, to her relationship with the Hell's Angels, to her being surveilled by the FBI. It's kind of, you know, a cradle to the grave story here with Janis Joplin.
Now, Jake, what do you see that connects the stories of the 27 Club? Do you see something that kind of holds true in each of those cases that you've seen?
Certainly with the earlier artists, when we're talking about Janis and Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison, the subjects that I cover in the first three seasons of the show, they all die within a year or so of one another. And they're all relatively, they're all the same age. They're all 27 and they all kind of come up in the music scene at the same time. And it was a scene, it was a nascent scene. It was still early days and there weren't the sort of cautionary tales for them that they ultimately ended up becoming. So I think, you know, had they had a little more foresight, a little more experience, maybe it would have ended differently for them, but they just didn't. They kind of broke the mold and that's pretty sad.
Now, when you talk about the 27 Club, Jake, as you see new and up and coming acts as well, as they get into their 20s, do you battle against trying to see the dark side that's been there so many times before?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always kind of thinking of it. You know what I mean? I'm always thinking about it. But rock stars right now, rock and roll isn't the dominant cultural force that it was years ago. It's mainly hip hop now. And I'm not as plugged into that scene as I am rock and rock history. So, you know, someone told me today that Justin Bieber turns 27 this year. And, let's just hope Justin's living a clean, upstanding life and he makes it to his 28th birthday.
That's right. Now, what in the last year has inspired you about the work that you do? And maybe has there been anything that you've maybe a light's been shined on for inspiration for future works?
Yeah, I just think the power of storytelling and great entertainment. I mean, right now, you know, it's more than ever we need it. And, you know, I do my little version of it. And like I said, I'm thankful that I have an audience. I'm inspired by my audience. I'm compelled by my audience to keep creating. We have a production company called Double Elvis, where we're launching podcasts throughout the year. We have another one coming in a couple of weeks called Here Comes the Break. I have another show called Badlands, which gets into the crimes and scandals of actors and actresses and athletes. So, you know, I feel inspired to keep making great content because I'm lucky enough to have listeners who want to hear it.
That's right. Now, Jake, if folks want to find more information about the podcast and all the other social media you got going on as well, where's the best place?
You can find 27 Club on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. It's free. It's available for download anywhere. And if you want to follow me, it's at DisgracelandPod on Instagram and Twitter. And I'm easily searchable on Facebook as well.
All right. Well, it's been great to visit with you. 27 Club, check it out. And Jake, thank you for your time. Hopefully we can catch up again real soon, brother.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. You have a good day.
Have you ever wondered why some days you're just in the mood for a regular coffee and some days you want a triple espresso with some coffee beans to chew on while you wait? Well, according to a new study, you decide how much coffee to drink based on how your heart is feeling. Now, the researchers found that your body can tell when your blood pressure is high or when your heart is working overtime, and it makes you crave caffeine less. So if your body is telling you it doesn't want caffeine, pretty smart to listen. We love talking music. We love country music and new artists. Love visiting with them and get to know them a little better and share them with you as well. And Caleb Garrett, he fits a little bit of all of those. And Caleb, I appreciate it. It took us a minute to get this finally worked out, but glad to have you on today. Appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be on.
Now tell us, Caleb, where did music start for you? When did you know you had a love of music you couldn't quench?
So I grew up in Northeast Georgia, and if you've ever visited here before, you'll know that there's not a whole lot going on in this part of the world. I'm kind of in the mountains, and there's a deep musical heritage here, and my family originated from Ireland, Northern Ireland, actually, and there's a lot of bluegrass roots that moved to this part of the world from there that have been in my family for a long, long time, so everybody in the family sort of enjoyed the music or played it one. We had a lot of mandolin players and pickers, as we call them here. So, yeah.
Now, was bluegrass the underlying tone of the music, love of music for you?
It was a funny thing growing up. My mother was raised in the 80s, so she had the hair thing going on, and she was listening to Journey and Foreigner. And she's going to get mad at me for saying that. But I had that going on. And then I also had my grandfather listening to bluegrass and Hank Williams country, all that sort of stuff. So I picked up a lot. But the stuff I resonated most was probably the bluegrass folk style music.
What is it about that style of music that speaks to you so personally?
It's just very authentic to me. There's not a whole lot of hiding behind one of these and your voice. So it's kind of who you are, I feel like, comes out really, really well with that style of music.
Well, you can see the comfort that you have with the guitar. When did you first start picking at one?
So I was about 14 years old, and my mother had begged me since I was probably 10 to pick it up. And I went under the bed, and I was just being a kid and nosing around, and found an old guitar up under there. And just before that, my friends had brought in some Led Zeppelin albums into school, and I thought, wow, what is that? I need to be a part of whatever that is. So I just picked it up, and since I was 14, that's all I've really wanted to do. So,
how much time do you spend just playing, and how much is it therapy as much as it is practice?
When I first started, it was like 5 hours a day. It became an obsession, and that's really where the root of it was. Now that I've gotten out of college and started working, I play pretty much every weekend, and that's, you know, I pick up different things from people that I play with, and being around other people that are passionate about it, that's really where a lot of it comes in. Then I also studied classical guitar for 4 years in college, so that was a good experience. I got to pick up a lot of different styles that I hadn't really messed with before. So
how hard is it as a guitar picker to take instruction from somebody, especially if you're not a newbie into it?
It's tough. It can be tough. I'm an idealist for sure. So I like my way of doing things. So breaking out of your bubble and taking other people's advice can be hard. I like to learn from records and things that I have known and loved forever. And I feel like a lot of musicians are that way. So firsthand, it takes a little while to gain a relationship with somebody before you can really get that with them.
Now, who are your songwriting influences? Who are the ones that, when you think about the songwriter, I mean, obviously there are songs out there, but the songwriters, who are those that have inspired you so far?
The first one that popped in my head when you said that was Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac. I just really, really resonate with his playing style, first of all. And our voices are in similar registers. And I love his really stripped down way of writing songs. It's really simplistic, but the way that he produces it and really gets into the song really touches something emotionally, with still being simple but complex at the same time. It's hard to describe.
Now, being a new artist, sorry about the camera there, being a new artist in 2020, now 2021, what presents the biggest challenge keeping your name out there?
Well, the virus has obviously been a big thing, and finding a way to do things on the internet instead of in front of a live crowd, because that's what I'm really passionate about, is being in front of people. And I've been playing in front of people since I was 16, and I've done a lot of traveling, played in different bands, and that's how I got the word out. So not being able to really connect with people and be in my intimate venues, I like, and talk to people face to face, that's been the hardest thing for me, I'd say.
Now, doing the live stream events, how much have you had to learn technologically over the last year?
quite a bit. I had to learn how to use OBS and all that sort of stuff to get everything. And I'm an ultrasound technician by trade, so I have a little bit of tech knowledge, but it's been a challenge for sure. I'm not the most tech savvy with all that kind of stuff. So
now what have you been working on over the last year? Is it songwriting, maybe the instrumentation or vocalization or maybe certain things on each one of those, if you will?
Yeah, it's a little bit of it's a little bit of the time with everything. Being a vocalist and an instrumentalist, you always try to keep that up as much as you can. So I take my time with my car rides in the morning on the way to and from work are kind of my vocal practice sessions. If somebody heard me, they would think I was a lunatic probably. You know how all those vocal training things go. And then mostly songwriting. Now that we've had a little bit of time in isolation, I've taken some time to be more introspective and think about life and things like that. And hone my lyric writing has always seemed to be the part that I struggle with the most. So I've tried to hone that and, you know, learn to connect through a song better.
Now, has it been a challenge to keep it brighter? Have you noticed the darker undertones in your writing as well?
That's always been kind of a trend with me anyway. The negative spectrum of emotion in songs always, I was always into horror movies and, you know, just kind of darker art forms in general, oddly enough. I don't think it's affected it too much. In fact, if anything, finding the bright side in things during COVID might have actually made my songs a little happier.
Now, the Sunshine Girl, the success that you had with the single, how much does that drive your passion and inspire you as new works are upcoming for you as well?
Oh, it was very humbling because I the whole way I got into doing all of this was I met my manager, Greg Miller, at a studio just recording the demos for fun. So at the beginning of this, I never would have imagined I would have been produced by Larry Rogers and got to work with all the people I have. So it's it's a sobering experience, to say the least. I'm just enjoying it. So looking forward to getting to do that more and hopefully go beyond what we've already done. So
now, what was it like the first time you heard your voice on a radio for the first time? What was that like?
That was strange for sure. Once again, a very sobering, humbling experience. I'd been working in a studio since I was probably about 20. I'm 28 now. So I'd had a lot of experience with, you know, recording my voice and hearing it back and all that. But hearing it on a podcast or on just even pulling up Spotify and being able to type my name in was just a strange feeling.
Now, the social media has obviously helped everybody this last year. Which one of those has been the biggest challenge for you?
I'd say Instagram. As a person, I'm more of a sit down and talk with you face to face kind of person anyway. So social media in general can be a trick for me. But when you only have, you know, 30-second video to get your point across, it's a challenge to me because I'm not usually the bubbly cheerleader, kind of like, you know, that kind of stuff. So
now you got the guitar in front of you. Are you willing to play something for us today?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'll let you pick out what you want to play for us and just give a little intro to it.
All right. Very good. I appreciate that. So this is the newest single that we have out right now. This one's called Only One. It's available for sale everywhere on Spotify, all that good sort of stuff. And I wrote this one in about 2015. So this one's called Only One.
Spending all my time inside. It's mine and mine. Most days I tell myself I'm doing fine, but am I alive? I'm the only one who's not having fun. What's the point of this time I sit aside? And it's just begun. A mind it's on the run. It'll never find a place to hide. Find a place to hide. Risk is more like kerosene. I used to cry away my pain. What will be left when the flame burns away? Ashes gray. If I'm the only one who's not having fun, what's the point of this time I sit aside? And it's just begun. My mind is on the run. It'll never find a place to hide. If I'm the only one who's not having fun, what's the point of this time I sit aside? And it's just begun. Mine is on the run. It'll never find a place to hide. Find a place to hide.
There you go. There you go. That's good stuff.
Thank you.
Now, what has been the hardest part whenever you're doing streaming? I mean, how hard was it to get used to not having any response whatsoever?
It was an adjustment for sure. I kind of leaned on looking at the comments and getting as much feedback as I can so I can still connect with people as much as possible and try to interact that way. Also, I have a lot of inside jokes with a lot of my fans and friends, so they're good about connecting with me that way. So
now as you move forward in 2021, what's summer schedule, fall schedule? Is it starting to pick up a bit?
Yes. Now with everybody getting the vaccine, we're starting to book some shows. I just found out that I'm going to be playing lead guitar with my good friend Rebecca Todd at Floyd Fest in Floyd, Virginia. So that'll be a good thing. My other band, Andrew Chastain Band, we're opening up for Riley Green at a local music venue, so that'll be a good show. Other than that, personally, just trying to get back in the studio, and I've got a lot of songs I've been working on since we've been kind of locked up for a while, so looking forward to getting all that out there for everybody. So.
Now, you talk about the live show and opening up for folks. What is your favorite part of the live show that you think back as you've gone without having the opportunity to play in front of folks live? What is the thing that really sparks the memories?
Seeing people light up or dance and really just get into the music the way I do, because I really feel it when I play, and seeing other people feel the same thing I am, it's better than a conversation or any of that kind of stuff to me. I feel like that's a real way of communicating with somebody. I miss that. So
now, what is it about the guitar that you have grown so close with, the relationship with the instrument? What is it about the guitar and the relationship that's so special to you?
It's like, it's a hard thing to explain, but if you're a guitar player, you know that, you get obsessed with them. I have about 20 of them now, and each one of them has a different voice. And every time you buy one, it has songs in it, it seems like, and you can coax out something that you haven't felt before. They all feel differently. It's just a special bond you have with it. It's also more portable than a piano. So that's
just
one good
just, slightly, just slightly, just slightly.
So there's just something really, really tangible and cathartic about bending strings, and it kind of fights you as well. It's not the most... it's not the easiest instrument to get along with. So I like a little fight.
Yeah, I know, right? Now, if folks want to find out about those dates we were talking about, if they want to find out about the music, social media, any of that stuff, where's the best place to find everything there is to know about Caleb Garrett?
So I have a website that would be CalebGarrettMusic.com. That's Caleb with a K for those listening along. And you can also find me on Facebook, Caleb Garrett Music, also on Instagram under Caleb Garrett Music, all the same tag there.
Yeah, it took me a little while to find the Caleb Garrett too, because I was always looking for the C. And but yeah, Caleb Garrett with a K. And brother, it's been great to have the chance to spend a little bit of time with you today. I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule, and hopefully, brother, we can catch up again real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Now, there's no amount of social distancing that can keep us from our one true love: talking about other people when they're not around. A new study out of Dartmouth College in New Hampshire found that about 14% of our conversations every day are gossip. Even today, with lots of conversations happening over Zoom. That means one out of every seven things you say is gossip. But the research found not all gossip is necessarily bad. Now, most of our gossip isn't negative, it's neutral. And that's because most of our time, our goal with gossip isn't to put someone down, it's just to bond and connect with other people. The researchers say, quote, "By exchanging information with others, gossip is a way of forming relationships. It involves trust and facilitates a social bond." Do you know what baby names are hot? Ones that were huge at the 1930 World's Fair. The baby naming website Nameberry just released a list of names that parents in the U.S. are searching for the most. And the boy names are some real traveling salesmen going town to town by stagecoach selling tonic stuff. Now, the five boy names that the most people are asking for are Silas, Atticus, Arlo, Theodore, and Finn. Now, the five girl names that the most people are searching for are Luna, Maeve, Aurora, Isla, and Aurelia. Now, just because people are searching these names doesn't mean they're all going to choose those names. But it does mean those are the trendy names right now that are at least making people the most curious. Always love having some of our legendary friends back with us, and got Ronnie McDowell. We're celebrating an anniversary. So first off, Ronnie, always great to visit with you, brother.
You too, Cameron. And you and I were talking off the air. Older Women was recorded 41 years ago in a month, in June, a couple of months. And I didn't want to do the song at first because I didn't think women wanted to be known as older women. And I told Jamie O'Hara, the writer, who passed away in January, sadly, with cancer. And we were going to the studio that morning, me and my producer buddy Killen, and he stopped us and he said, "Ronnie, you've got to record this song. I'm 30 and my girlfriend's 38, and I know what I'm talking about." And I said, "All right, Jamie, sing it for me one more time." He grabbed his guitar, he did it, and I said, "Okay, Jamie, we'll do it." And so here's how fate works, Cameron. Fate is a hunter. It will find you. I went in the studio, recorded it one time, didn't even know the song, went to where the producer was by the sound controls. Buddy Killen jumped up. He goes, "What else do we need to do?" And I said, "Buddy, I don't even know that song." He said, "Listen, number one record, one take."
Wow.
Yep, that's how fate works.
And to look back on that and to see the longevity of the song, and now, like we mentioned before we came on the air, to see it blowing up virally on TikTok to a whole new generation. I mean, Ronnie, what's that mean to you as well?
Well, you know, every day somebody is sending me some kid that is singing along with older women. And I'm like, you know, that just shows you some songs are just timeless. And that shows you again that you never know. I'm going to send you my new song at the end of the week, first of the week. Did you see the movie Waterboy with Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider?
Of course I did.
Well, don't you remember when Rob stood up in the back and he goes, "You can do it."
Yes.
Well, That's the title of my new single, and I'm so excited about it. I did it with the mariachi band, Mexican mariachi band. I'm doing the last verse in Spanish. It's romantic. It's a love song, but it's funny. And I sent it to Rob Schneider, and he gave me his complete endorsement, and I wanted that. And so it comes out at the first of the week, and I'm so excited about it. I'm debuting it Friday night. We're streaming live every Friday and Saturday since the pandemic at the beautiful Donahoe Hotel, 120 years old in Red Bowling Springs, Tennessee, where, by the way, Dinah Shore got her start in 1937.
Wow. Breaking out a little teaching and lessons on us today, Ronnie.
Well, I'm a history fanatic, and and Woodrow Wilson, the president, stayed in room 8. See, every Friday and Saturday, I have some of my celebrity friends to call in. Last week, it was the Bellamy Brothers and Wink Martindale. This week, it's Jimmy Fortune and the Oak Ridge Boys. And so every week, some of my buddies call in and we talk, and then we do one of their songs. It's turned into quite an adventure, and I tell everybody I'm the most blessed soul on the planet.
And now, Ronnie, I know we talk live streaming, we talk about events. I think back as we had the live stream event early on in the pandemic when T. Graham Brown and you guys all did a great show. And how much do you say that live streaming has kind of kept things afloat in the last 12 months?
It's turned into the biggest blessing. It's hard to describe. It led to the Ronnie McDowell Entertainment Center and Museum, and I was able to get all the things that I've collected from fans and different sources out of my garage and hang them up where folks could see them. And we have a fan wall, and we decided if you have a favorite picture of Ronnie and McDowell and you together, send it in. And we've almost got the whole wall covered. And it is amazing. So folks can watch us every Friday and Saturday, Ronnie McDowell, Facebook.com. And they can also see my artwork. A lot of people don't know this, but I'm a painter. I've been with the Disney Corporation now for 7 years. But George Jones called me, and he goes, "Hey, Ronnie," just before he passed, I "want you to paint a picture of me getting a DUI on my lawnmower." And that's been one of the biggest selling paintings that I've done. They can see that and Dolly Parton and Elvis on a picnic and Loretta Conway. And 10% of every print sale goes to St. Jude's, the best organization in the world, in my opinion.
And Ronnie, you talk about working with St. Jude's as well. How important is it to you in this stage of your career to really be giving back and showing others also about giving back and helping others in their lives as well?
Well, it's really important to me because I've had a Children's Cancer Foundation for years, and we go to Memphis. If nobody's ever been to St. Jude's, they need to go. It'll change your life. And we give them money. Because I don't know if folks know this, but kids that have cancer, they can go there for free. They don't charge them a penny. And, it's just such an unbelievable place. And there's a wall there with all the famous people in Memphis that have donated. Frank Sinatra, Bob Hope, the list goes on and on. But the biggest donor, I want to tell folks this, the biggest donor to St. Jude's, and every name is up there, but there's one name that's almost rubbed out because people just wanted to touch his name. Who do you think that is?
I want to say Elvis.
That's it. His name is almost rubbed out where people just touched his name. Does that put it in perspective for everybody?
That's cool. Now I know how much of an effect that the king himself had on you as well. And, Can you talk to that just a little bit, Ronnie, about the effect his music had on you?
Yeah, when I was 3 years old, I was going around the house in Portland, Tennessee, singing "Your Cheating Heart." I'm the biggest Hank Sr. fan on the planet. And then in 1954, my sister brought home a record called "That's All Right, Mama" on Sun Records. And it was a guy by the name of Elvis Presley. And then in 1956, she brought home "Hound Dog and Don't Be Cruel," and I haven't been the same since.
So you blame it all on Elvis. I got you now, Ronnie. I see where we're coming from now.
Oh, hey, if it wasn't for Elvis, I wouldn't be talking to you, Cameron. That's the truth.
And to see even his effect on music, even to today, Ronnie, I mean, it's obvious how much of an effect he's had even on the future generations.
It's mind-boggling, to be honest with you. My 9-year-old granddaughter called me back last February before the pandemic, said, "Papa, would you come and have lunch with me?" So I did. I was the only adult there at the table, and I love to aggravate kids, and I said, "Who's the meanest one here?" And they all pointed at each other. I said, "Who knows who Donald Trump is?" Maybe 3 hands. I said, "All right, who knows who Elvis Presley is?" "We do, we do." So this little black child boy sitting across from me, he said, "Well, who don't know who Elvis is?" And I said, "Well, y'all are third graders." So this other little boy with Buddy Holly glasses, he stood up and he said, "Hey, Mr. Ronnie, check this out." And again, tell me this. They're third graders, 9 years old. He stands up and he had an Elvis t-shirt on. I told that on Elvis radio. I said, "Hey, let me just put it in perspective for all the folks out there about Elvis Presley. This guy, 43-44 years after he's been gone, kids are wearing his t-shirt to school."
Stuff. Now, again, the 40th anniversary, Older Women, and Ronnie, I always want to make sure, again, to let folks know where to find more information, the Friday, Saturday shows, and everything else you've got going on as well, my friend.
Well, thank you, Cameron. It's Ronnie McDowell, Facebook.com, every Friday and Saturday, live streaming. The artwork is on RonnieMcDowellArt.com, and 10% of that goes to St. Jude's. Just, I'm really proud of that, proud to give back, and yeah, at this point in my life, you know, I've done everything I've ever dreamed of, and that's the truth. And I just signed my new record deal with Curb Records March 25th on my birthday, my 71st birthday. What a wonderful birthday present. And Mike Curb, he said, "Ronnie," Mike Curb, who owns the label, naturally, he goes, "Ronnie, you know what I like about you?" And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "You never give up." And I said, "Well, Mike, when I do, it's over."
That's right. Well, Ronnie, it is always a privilege to visit with you, sir. I've been a fan for so many years, and you've always been so good to us. I appreciate your time, and look forward to talking again real soon, my friend.
Cameron, look forward to those 2 new songs, my son's version of Older Women, which is better than my version, Tyler McDowell. And I'm not just saying it because he's my kid. It really is better than my version. And then You Can Do It.
Now, a lot of people have been getting groceries delivered during COVID, so some of us may have forgotten our grocery store manners, and with that in mind, came up with tips for you today. Number 1, don't leave your cart in the middle of a parking lot. It blocks parking spaces, and it's just annoying. Take the extra 30 seconds to return it. And if you see another one stray, hey, go move that one back as well. Number 2, don't leave the checkout line to go grab another item. If the line is 3 people deep and you're still waiting, that's fine. But once you're checking out, you can't leave. Number 3, don't block the aisle with your cart. Move it to the side so other people can get by. I mean, we're still in a pandemic, so no one wants to touch your cart to move it anyway, right? Number 4, gaming the 10 items or less lane. Don't line up with 15 items and expect no one to notice. A recent poll found 89% of us think 10 items or less should be a strict rule, and even 11 isn't okay. And number 5, letting your kids misbehave. The grocery store isn't a jungle gym. They can have fun and be kids, just don't let them get too crazy. A brand new series that is premiering today on Discovery Plus, Duff's Happy Fun Bake Time. I love the name. Duff Goldman on the line with us today. And Duff, always great to visit with you, brother.
Yes, good to be here. How you been?
Doing well as anybody else, right?
Exactly.
Now, Duff, tell us where the idea of the Happy Fun Bake Time came, and let our listeners, if they haven't seen the previews, let us know a little bit about the story behind the series as well.
Sure. So I was in my kitchen, and I was baking a babka, and as I was baking, I was watching Sesame Street, And I was kind of like watching Sesame Street and just sort of like seeing how they explain things. And I just think it's really beautiful the way that Sesame Street works. Then I was like, I wonder how Sesame Street would explain this vodka. And I started like thinking about like what that show would look like. And then I eventually just wrote a whole episode of it because I thought it was, you know, it was kind of neat. And then I brought it to the Jim Henson Company and I was like, hey, I got this cool idea. You know, got all these crazy characters in the bakery. We can go anywhere and do anything. And this is how we sort of explain the science of cooking, you know, with using, you know, puppets and magic. And they were like, yeah, this sounds great. So we built the set and got some puppets and they created all the characters. So in the bakery, there is, there's Slater, who's a sloth who lives in the ceiling and asks me a lot of questions. But he's the one that could really kind of get me talking about like the, you know, the science of stuff. Like, oh, why are you doing that? Or what's that thing over there? There's a Krabby Krab named Edgar, who is our little nod to Baltimore. He's a Chesapeake Bay Blue Crab. He's named after Edgar Allan Poe. He's kind of like the crabby guy in the bakery that doesn't like it. You always made that guy. Our oven is a dragon and he bakes everything in his mouth. Our mixer is a robotic elephant who mixes with her trunk. Her name is Busy. And my sous chef is a robot made out of old kitchen parts named Couscous. And she kind of keeps everybody in line. She's sort of like the taskmaster. And then my grocer, like my purveyor who brings me all the food, is my real-life sous chef, Jeff Manthorne, who's also a singer-songwriter. So every time he brings us, like, you know, eggs or milk or fish or whatever, he'll pull out his guitar and sing a song about whatever it is. And all the songs are, like, really good and really catchy and really funny.
Working with the Muppets, I mean, guys of our age, I mean, we grew up knowing nothing but the Muppets. I mean, what's it like to turn the life full circle and now be working hand in hand with them?
I mean, it's such a blessing. I don't know. I mean, it's just a dream come true. And being able to, like, you know, when the Puppets, like, the Puppets, it takes a lot of work, right? It's a lot of technical stuff. They have to, like, they have all these monitors, all these TV screens, like, below the counter, so the puppeteers that are laying on the floor can see what the camera sees. And so those guys are down there doing their thing. I get to kind of hang back and watch how, like, the puppeteers and then the puppet wranglers and the camera guys and the crew guys, everybody is sort of, like, you know, it's like everybody that works on the show does a lot of puppet shows because they understand, like, it's very different than filming a regular TV show. And so getting to watch, like, these puppeteers laying on the ground in uncomfortable positions, operating, you know, pretty complex puppets and bringing them to life and making them alive and making them emote. I mean, it's like I had like a front row seat to, like, the best backstage show ever. It was amazing, you know?
Duff, obviously everybody's had some time to themselves over the last year, and I love to find out what folks have come up with. And I know you being the baking extraordinaire, did you come up with any new recipes or any terrible recipes over pandemic time?
You know, one of the things that I did, I wanted to make sure, like, when all this stuff started, my wife and I were talking about it, and I was like, you know, let's not, like, waste this time. Like, I don't want it to just sort of be like, you know, a year or whatever, and that's going to go by and we're not going to, like, you know, change and grow and do stuff. So, you know, both of us really started trying a lot of new things. And one of the things that I did was I've been revisiting a lot of things in baking that I felt like I wasn't that good at. So, like, I've been baking a lot of pies. You know, pies are one of those things you can always be better at. They're very difficult. And then one of the things was also my cheesecake. I've never really been, like, I can make a cheesecake, right? And so I can follow a recipe, but I've never been, like, great at cheesecakes. And so, man, I've probably baked, like, 17, 18 cheesecakes over a pandemic. I've been trying to get better at cheesecake. Like, I just, like, try to get it so, like, it doesn't have a crack on the top and it's not too dark on the edges, but it's cooked all the way through and really creamy. And so I've like really kind of upped my cheesecake game. I got to tell you, man, now.
Now, again, the new series on Discovery Plus. Want to make sure, Duff, and let folks know if they need more information about Duff's Happy Fun Bake Time. And then, of course, everything you got going social media wise as well.
So, you know, you can find me at Duff Goldman. And you know, Instagram, Twitter, I think Facebook too. I haven't looked. But yeah, you know, like my social media is kind of funny. Like half of it's like businessy stuff, and then half of it's like, look at this bird I saw. Or like we just had a daughter, and so she's 3 months old. So now there's a lot of pictures of my daughter on social media that I just can't stop posting because she's so cute. Oh my god.
That's awesome stuff. Well, Duff, it's always great to visit with you. Looking forward to checking out the new series on Discovery Plus. And Duff, look forward to visiting again real soon, my friend.
Awesome. Can't wait, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 72nd episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, question, or anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page, gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at GQ with Cam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, you can visit our merch store. We've got hoodies, shirts, mugs, tumblers, stickers, and more. GQwithcam.com/shop. You can also make a one-time donation at buymeacoffee.com/GQwithcam. If you have a special guest idea, you can email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. And again, thanks to our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. We're going to let him play us out and hope you guys have a great rest of your Thursday.